What could you be thinking, Lord, to allow this tragedy? You must have some confidence instilled in me. Only you can see what lies deep within this troubled mind. An overwhelming pain I look for you to bind, because you'll heal my broken heart.
Do you believe that? It's more than a compelling song. It is a declaration of truth. But is it something that you've applied to your life, particularly if you've had trauma in your life? Welcome to In the Market with Janet Parshall. So glad we're going to spend the next hour together. Let me give you our phone number as questions come up. 877-548-3675. 877-548-3675. Life is real, life is earnest, my mama used to say when I was growing up. And we read in his word that we're going to have some rough times in this side of glory and in this life. But sometimes I don't think we anticipate exactly how traumatic life can be. So how do you find hope and healing when you've experienced trauma in your life? How do you deal with the overwhelming stress that can actually become crippling? What happens when life is too much with you, as the poet said? That's what we're going to talk about this hour. 877-548-3675. Our conversation emanates from a book that Dr. Laurel Shaler has written entitled Reclaiming Sanity. Dr. Shaler is a professor at Liberty University and a speaker on faith and emotional well-being. She's a national certified counselor and social worker. She's a former psychotherapist for the Department of Veterans Affairs. And guess what she did there? She specialized in treating trauma. Laurel, I thank you so very, very much for being with us. And I have to ask you, let me start with your time with the Department of Veterans Affairs. We hear some horrible statistics that at the rate of 22 or more a day, so many of our vets are committing suicide. And as we unthread that needle trying to answer the why question, so much of it comes back to traumatic events in somebody's life. Clinically, how does one define trauma as opposed to just having a really bad day?
Hi, well, first of all, thank you so much for having me with you this evening. I'm delighted to be here. And post-traumatic stress disorder, or PTSD, is a mental health diagnosis that involves a very specific set of symptoms. And that first criteria is exposure to a traumatic event. So that would be something like combat, speaking of veterans, but it could also be a natural disaster, a car accident, or something like an abortion. And beyond that initial exposure to a traumatic event, someone with PTSD would have very specific symptoms. They might include nightmares, trouble with sleep, anger, or even negative thoughts or beliefs that tell them that they can't trust people anymore. And only a qualified mental health professional can make a diagnosis of PTSD. And although only about 10% of people exposed to trauma develop PTSD, it's really important that we consider what happens to the other 90%. Mm. So it's not to say that just because you don't develop PTSD, you don't suffer as a result of a traumatic event.
Wow, that is a hugely important point. So let me hit the pause button and let me back up just a little bit. So an event, why for some people does it manifest itself as PTSD and for others it does not? And I ask that with a follow-up question, which is, if you have gotten PTSD out of a particularly horrific event in your life, does that make you a, quote, weaker person than someone else who may have experienced the same thing but doesn't end up with a clinical diagnosis of PTSD?
That's an excellent question that a lot of people ask themselves. They begin to tell themselves that they are not a strong person because they've developed PTSD. But the reality is that's just not the case. There are lots of risk factors for post-traumatic stress disorder. We typically look at the pre-event factors, which take place before the trauma, the event factors, which take place during the trauma, and the post-event factors, which take place following the trauma. So if you are at a higher risk for developing PTSD, then you're more likely to develop it. So for example, if you are a woman, you are more likely to develop PTSD than men. But other pre-event factors might be repeated exposure to trauma. So perhaps somebody has had repeated experiences of being sexually or physically abused. So that's going to increase their likelihood that at some point they're going to develop PTSD. And also just having experienced abuse as a child, you're more likely to develop PTSD as an adult if you're exposed to another traumatic event later in your life. So that would be the pre-event factors. Now, we also have some event factors. So, for example, if you're injured during a traumatic event, you're more likely to develop PTSD. The higher level of exposure you have to a traumatic event increases your likelihood of developing PTSD. So what takes place for you during the traumatic event can also raise your risk for the development of PTSD later on.
Wow. And no, please, go ahead.
Well, I know it's like drinking from a water hose or a fire hydrant here, so there's so much information, and so I want to make sure I answer all of your questions thoroughly, and I don't share too much at once. I just wanted to close with that post-event risk factor, and the predominantly important risk factor there is a lack of social support. So for those people who have experienced trauma and they don't have anywhere to turn and they don't have people that they can rely on to help them through this event, they're more likely to develop PTSD. And social support can be other people that we are friends with or that we're related to, but sometimes that social support needs to come from other people who have had a similar experience or even a mental health professional.
Wow. Oh, so many questions just on what you said. And I'm so thankful that you're here and that we're talking about this, Laurel, and we're exposing to the disinfectant of sunlight this kind of a conversation. Because guess what? This happens in the church. This isn't an outside the church problem. We have hurting, broken people inside the church. So how do we help those individuals reclaim sanity? That's a takeoff on the title of the book that Dr. Shaler has authored, Reclaiming Sanity, Hope and Healing for Trauma, Stress, and Overwhelming Life Events. You join us with your questions, 877-548-3675, 877-548-3675. Ever wondered, does God know what I'm going through? And if he knows, does he even care? When his father was dying of cancer, John Stevens fell into confusion. And in his excellent book, How Can I Be Sure?, John explains how doubt can ultimately lead to stronger faith. Give a gift of any amount and ask for How Can I Be Sure? By calling 877-JANET-58 or give online at inthemarketwithjanetpartial.org. We're visiting with Dr. Laurel Shaler. We get to spend the hour with her. She's a professor at Liberty University, a national certified counselor and social worker, and she was a psychotherapist for the Department of Veterans Affairs. She joins us today with her new book, Reclaiming Sanity, Hope and Healing for Trauma, Stress, and Overwhelming Life Events. Lots of people online with questions. 877-548-3675. Ron, I welcome you. Your question, please.
Hello?
Hi, Ron. Yes, you're on the air.
Hey, how do you know if you have this PTSD and what do you do about it? I spent 20 years after high school in EMS, downtown Chicago, Southside, Knife and Gun Club. I worked in a funeral home for a while, fire service. I'm still in the medical field, but I don't remember having dreams for about 20 years, and then the last couple of years, I'm starting to have weird dreams, you know, just about this and that and the other. So, how do you know if you have this?
Mm-hmm. Dr. Well, Shaler. Ron, that's a That's a great question, and first of all, thank you for your service, because you've certainly been there for a lot of people during their times of crises, and you would certainly have met the first criteria for development of PTSD, and that's directly experiencing traumatic events. So you've witnessed quite a bit in your long career. When you say that you've had nightmares, that's also a possible additional symptom. So there are numerous symptoms that have to be present in order for a diagnosis of PTSD to be met. I would start, if I were you, with your primary care doctor, who could go over some of that with you, and or they could refer you to a mental health professional, or you could seek out a mental health professional on your own. I always recommend the American Association of Christian Counselors. That's AACC. On their website, they have a link that you can click on that can help you find a licensed counselor in your area. So I would recommend that you do one of those two things, that you either speak with your primary care provider or that you seek out a qualified mental health professional on your own so that they can go over all of this with you and complete a formal assessment with you so that they can help determine whether you have PTSD or whether maybe you have, you know, something else going on that they could help you with. But I feel quite confident that there is help for you.
Ron, thank you. I appreciate your being with us. Jeannie, let me turn to you in Arizona. Thank you for being here. And your question for Dr. Shaler, please.
Dr. Shaler, please. I went to a chiropractor because I've got some real physical issues. And I went to a specialist in California, and he, without me telling him, said, you have signs and symptoms of a post-traumatic stress disorder on chiropractic evaluation. And I think that your last caller answered a lot of the questions, but what could a chiropractor have seen on physical examination that would show that kind of thing, please?
That's an excellent question, and it's not one that I could necessarily answer. It could be that just in his or her experience, they have worked with enough people that they started noticing some things. For example, maybe you were really jumpy. Maybe they noticed that you always sat with your back to the wall. You were looking around. I couldn't tell you exactly what they may have seen, but sometimes we might notice some of those behavioral cues that indicate that perhaps this person has been through something that's resulting in some of that hypervigilance or hyper awareness. Is it possible that that's something that they could have seen?
I don't believe so. It's a good point that you've made, but I went for an evaluation. The guy's John Bergman in Huntington Beach, California. Excellent guy. Highly recommend him. And he went through tremendous testings, and I had an appointment in the morning and an appointment in the afternoon to evaluate, and it was from the evaluation. Maybe I should go back to his office and ask him the question I asked you.
That would be very interesting.
Yeah. Jeannie, I thank you very, very much for being with us. 877-548-3675. That's our number here on In the Market. Let me turn to Tim now, who joins us from Ohio. Tim, welcome, and your question, please.
My question is it possible that someone could be experiencing PTSD and have no memory of the event, the traumatic event, that would be the cause of it?
That is an excellent question. I would say it is possible, because sometimes our minds do this thing to protect us where they don't allow us to recall really traumatic events. Typically, people have some idea that they have been through something. So, for example, a combat veteran may not be able to remember anything that happened on a certain day, but they know where they were, the location that they were in, and from other people's reports, they know that they've been involved in a firefight or, you know, experienced an IED explosion or something like that. But I would say it is possible. But one thing to keep in mind is that no one can help you recover memories. So mental health professionals can only work with the memories that you bring to them. But that doesn't mean that they can't help you with the symptoms that you're experiencing. And as you start to work on those symptoms, it may be that you start to remember something for yourself. And then at that point, they could start working with you on those specific memories.
Mm. And I thank you so much, Tim, for being a part of this conversation. Our number again is 877-548-3675, 877-548-3675. I'm coming up to a break, Laurel, but let me go back to something you said before, which is the percentages of those that have a textbook diagnosis of PTSD and those who were traumatized who don't necessarily have that. I want to make sure that our friends understand that you may have all kinds of things you're dealing with without having that specific label. Am I right? And if we do, how do we treat those or recognize that problem?
Yeah, absolutely. You will not always have a diagnosis of PTSD, but you could still be suffering from depression or anxiety or insomnia. And so you can get help for those specific problems, even if you don't have a diagnosis of PTSD.
Excellent. Thank you for the answer to that. Let me take a break. Lots of people online. The book is called Reclaiming Sanity, Hope and Healing for Trauma, Stress, and Overwhelming Life Events, written by our guest, Dr. Laurel Shaler. More after this. Sitting with Dr. Laurel Shaler. She's the author of Reclaiming Sanity, Hope and Healing for Trauma, Stress, and Overwhelming Life Events. Let me take one more call here for just a moment, and let me go to Dina or Dinah, forgive me, in Florida. Your question, please.
Yes, my question is, what is the difference or the similarities between PTSD and anxiety disorder?
Oh, that's a great question. So post-traumatic stress disorder used to be classified as a type of anxiety disorder, but that has actually changed in the last few years. And so now it's not specifically considered an anxiety disorder, but many people who suffer from PTSD do struggle with anxiety. And anxiety is excessive worry, and we experience anxiety in our minds, and we can experience it throughout our bodies where we experience a rapid heart rate, or maybe we experience stomach upset, or we can't sleep. So those two things are very related. Some people have PTSD and don't struggle with anxiety, and some people have anxiety problems and don't have PTSD. But that gives you a little bit of context for the relationship between those two.
On that note, let me pick up and move to the area of stress, one of the topics you mention in your subtitle, Laurel, and that is, okay, how does one recognize whether or not they're stressed? And by that, I don't mean, oh, I got a headache this big, I'm having a bad day. I mean clinically problematic stress. How do you recognize those symptoms, and what should we be looking for?
Well, one thing I think is really interesting is sometimes we only think of stress as bad, but there's also something called eustress, E-U-S-T-R-E-S-S, which is good stress. So this is when something that is good that happens to us, but we're still having a difficult time coping with it. So things like having a baby or starting college or buying a house or getting a job promotion, getting married, those types of things, they're positive disruptions in our life, but we have a difficult time coping with them. But most of us are more likely to be familiar with distress, which is that bad stress. This is the negative, upsetting feelings that accompany all the bad stuff that goes on for us. And it can take hold of us and give us this idea that it's never going to end, that we're never going to be able to get through this level of stress. And as a result, we can experience physical and behavioral symptoms. So we can have the high blood pressure, we can have the tension headaches, the changes in appetite. Stress can also keep us up all night. So that's a little bit about the difference between good stress and bad stress, but really it's distress that's more often experienced as a result of the negative occurrences in our life.
I appreciate that. All right. Now let me go to the third category, only because it's delineated in the subtitle, and that is, how does one define an overwhelming life event from a clinical perspective?
Yeah, so I would say that being overwhelmed is when you have so much going on in life that you just don't even know where to begin. You don't know how you're going to get everything out of control. Speaking of anxiety, you can feel real anxious when you're overwhelmed, maybe even close to panic, as if hiding under your work desk would just make everything disappear. Maybe you wake up in the morning and you have this sinking feeling and you can't figure out why, and then all of a sudden you remember everything you've got going on in your life or something from the past, and it just engulfs you with this powerful emotion, and ultimately you feel plagued with chaotic thoughts, memories, feelings, and you might have your anxiety rise to a point where you just can't face the mountain of demands and you don't know how to face them. So that is a little bit about what feeling overwhelmed might feel like.
Yeah, thank you for that. So this raises a whole bunch of questions, and that is, let me start with the overwhelming life event aspect. And that is, you talked when we were discussing PTSD about one of the problems being a lack of social support for so many people who have had an overwhelming life event. It starts with not telling somebody, shame, fear, not feeling you can find a safe person. Talk to me about how important it is to tell somebody about your life event.
Yeah, well, one of the things about talking with other people is that you don't necessarily have to dive into all those nitty-gritty details. I think sometimes people are afraid that if they share a part of it, they're going to be expected to share everything. But we really don't have to do that. We can start off by telling someone that we have something that we want to share with them, that it's really weighing on us and we need some support, but we don't necessarily want to share every detail. Maybe at that moment, we're just not ready to share every detail. But if you think of something like Alcoholics Anonymous, there are lots of social or peer support groups that are available to help people who have gone through something really difficult. And they provide a lot of assistance through these different curative factors. So, for example, this idea of universality. So we start to recognize, I'm not alone. I'm not the only one who has experienced this problem. I'm not this problem isn't unique to me, and that other people might be having similar thoughts, feelings, or behaviors, and that alone can provide a sense of relief and hope. So just being able to talk to other people who maybe have experienced something similar. But yeah, even if that's not available, just having someone that the Bible tells us to weep with those who weep, having somebody who can weep with us, somebody who can listen to us and be there for us, can just make a world of difference in terms of us being able to face each day after we've gone through something really tough.
Yeah. Wow. What a good word that is. Let me take a break. Wow, this hour is going fast. We're halfway through. The book is called Reclaiming Sanity, Hope and Healing for Trauma, Stress, and Overwhelming Life Events. Our guest, Dr. Laurel Shaler, and our number is 877-548-3675, 877-548-3675. More after this. The endless bias spin you hear on mainstream media? On In the Market, we're using God's Word as our guide as we examine today's events. And we want you to be informed and bold about His truth. This is a listener-supported program, so if you value what you hear and you want us to continue on your station, become a partial partner with your monthly support. Call 877-JANET-58. That's 877-JANET-58. Or go online to In the Market with JanetPartial.org. We're visiting with Dr. Laurel Shaler. She is a professor at Liberty University, and she's a national certified counselor and social worker, a former psychotherapist for the Department of Veterans Affairs. And she's written an important book because life is tough. It's called Reclaiming Sanity, Hope and Healing for Trauma, Stress, and Overwhelming Life Events. 877-548-3675. That's our phone number here, and we welcome your calls. My mind is racing, Laurel, because there's so many questions that I have, not the least of which is you've had a few callers already that have referenced an event perhaps years ago. So how do we get past the past so we can live the abundant life that Christ has promised us?
Yeah, and that can be a really difficult thing. If we're hanging on to that past, then we really can't live presently in the future, but we can choose to be healed from our past and face the future in a better place. And of course, it's not as simple as just making that decision, but that is that first step, because our past doesn't have to define us. It doesn't have to dictate our future. We can lean into the work of the God who created us and move toward Jesus and his redemptive work in our lives. And there's a lot of different ways that we can work towards moving beyond the past. And one of my favorites is building a monument to God's faithful love. So when people who have experienced something terrible, they are often reminded of that bad experience. And anytime they have that reminder, whether it's through something they see or hear or smell, it can trigger a negative symptom or thought or feeling. But we don't have to leave those there. We can take these terrible reminders of the past and turn them into a monument that signifies God's faithful presence. An example of this, I had a friend who had some trees growing in her yard, and one of the trees looked like it was going to die, but every year it kept blooming again. And she decided to make a sign, put it in front of the sign, and the sign read, "Still Standing." And it wasn't just about the tree, it was also about her own life, because she had gone through a season where in a very brief amount of time, she went through a very difficult divorce, had breast cancer, and her mother passed away, and this was all in the same short time period. And she, when she was triggered of how difficult that was, she reminded herself that she was still standing, that God wasn't done with her yet, that he had given her hope, and that he had her a future and a promise for her. And so every time she walked past that physical reminder of that sign in front of that tree that said "still standing," it was a reminder to her that God was faithful and that he wasn't through with her yet.
Wow, that's great. You divide the book up into four segments: Reclaiming Clarity, Reclaiming Me, Reclaiming Peace, and Reclaiming Sanity, the title of the book. Let me go to one section that you wrote about in Reclaiming Me, because this is a big one. You write about it, but I know that this has to be an area where people struggle, and that is really and truly looking into the mirror and seeing the person that God sees, not the voice in your head that's the accuser or the abusive parent or the person who berated you to the point where you have just horrible self-confidence and you've been traumatized by that. How do we get past all of that cacophony of the noises and voices in our head and get to the point where we hear and see the one who loves us?
Yeah, that I think that's my favorite part in the whole book is for us to start knowing who we really are. If we start to look at ourselves in the way that God sees us instead of those lies that the world tells us, then we're going to be much better off. We're not defined by who other people think we are or who other people say we are. We're not even defined by the lies that we tell ourselves. And sometimes those lies come from ourselves, and sometimes those lies are on repeat, stuck on repeat in our minds from things that we've been told earlier in our lives. I love the book of Ephesians and everything it tells us about who we are, about who God says we are. Ephesians 1:4 says that God chose us. Ephesians 1:7 tells us that we are forgiven, and Ephesians 2:10 states that we are his workmanship. We're not our own workmanship. So as believers, then we cannot allow the world or even well-meaning friends and family to define us and label us. We've got to reject those voices and start proclaiming the truth of God's word. No, I'm not stupid. I'm God's workmanship. No, I do not deserve to be abused. I am a temple of God. No, I am not unloved. I am a friend of Jesus. We have to allow the voice of Christ to rise above every other voice that creeps into our minds.
Thank you for that. 877-548-3675, 877-548-3675. Lynn, I welcome you and your question for Dr. Shaler, please.
Hi. Yeah, I went through an assault in January of this year, and I am seeing a trauma counselor. I still have a lot of anxiety and stomach issues and panicky issues if I have to go anywhere. I wanted to know, how long does the PTSD last? That's what I've been diagnosed with.
Well, thank you so much for sharing that. I'm so sorry that you've been through that terrible event, and I'm glad to hear that you are working with a mental health professional who can help you work through that really tough experience that you've had. You know, unfortunately, there is no established amount of time. We don't know how long PTSD lasts, but there is great hope that people can fully recover from PTSD. There used to be a belief that once you develop PTSD, you had it forever. But that's not necessarily the case. People do recover from trauma and from PTSD. So the same can be true for you.
I thank you for that good word, Lynn. Thanks for being a part of this conversation. Let me go to the section of the book because perhaps it goes to the heart of the question we just heard. If we're trying to reclaim peace in our life on the road to reclaiming sanity in our lives, how do we break those chains? You write about this in the book, the ones that keep us broken, the lies that we heard, the abuse that we can't undo what was done to us. So how do we move to a place where we can find peace? How do we get past the pain?
Well, one of the ways that we can break the chains that keep us broken is actually learning to forgive. That is a very challenging component of recovery. It's something that some people might even be tempted to start tuning you out once you start talking about forgiveness, because it's not fair. It's not fair that something bad has been done to me and I have to forgive the person who did it. But I want to make it clear that forgiveness is not justifying the bad behavior, the sinful behavior, and it's also not excusing it. What we're really doing is forgiving others as God has forgiven us, so that we can break free from what is keeping us held down and held back. It's when we don't forgive someone, it's like we're holding our own heads underwater, and we want to start to breathe again. You know, so if you're someone who frequently harbors grudges, or maybe you even think about how you can get revenge, or maybe you go over and over and over in your mind these things that have happened to you in the past, then you are allowing yourself to be repunished. And you don't deserve that, because you didn't deserve the bad thing that happened to you to begin with. And ultimately, when we do that, we're giving someone else ongoing power and control. It's been said that we're allowing someone to live rent-free in our minds, and we shouldn't allow that. So when we start to work towards forgiveness, then we can start to find peace and freedom.
I thank you for that. 877-548-3675. Let me welcome Barbara into the conversation. Barbara, your question, please.
My question is about PTSD and how every day when I wake up, I'm overwhelmed by facing life every day. And the person I would have to forgive would be myself.
Yeah. Well, thank God there is forgiveness. Our forgiveness first comes from Him through Jesus Christ. And if we can accept His forgiveness, if we ask Him to forgive us, the Word tells us He is faithful and just and will forgive us and cleanse us of all unrighteousness. And once we accept His forgiveness, we can work towards forgiving ourselves, because there is nothing that we have done that is beyond His forgiveness, and He wants to set us free, and He wants to set you free too.
That's a good word and such an important word. Pressing into him, Laurel, it seems to me to be very important. All the brokenness in the world has to be laid at his feet. And some people think, given the intensity of the pain that they're dealing with, Barbara, I'm guessing that this is very much like you. We want to be able to put our arms around somebody. We want to feel the physical touch of somebody. And we know that the Lord is there, but how can we sense his presence and know his healing? And it's a big question. The music's playing, and I want to give you enough time to respond. So if you'd hang on to that question, Laurel, I'll get your answer on the other side. Reclaiming Sanity. That's the name of the book that Dr. Laurel Shaler has written. Back after this.
Well, I've heard you've opened blinded eyes, made the lame to walk again. And I've heard you've given dead men back their lives, and you can save fallen men. You made the sun and the moon, you put the twinkle in the stars. Could I ask one thing from you? Would you heal my broken heart?
We're visiting with Dr. Laurel Shaler. She is a certified counselor and social worker, former psychotherapist for the Department of Veterans Affairs, and she is the author of the book we're discussing this hour, Reclaiming Sanity, Hope and Healing for Trauma, Stress, and Overwhelming Life Events. And it follows beautifully, Laurel, on the heel of that song, which is, there are so many components in moving toward healing. And I want to talk about the most important, which is the relationship we have with the great physician himself. But when you're hurting, and we all heard the pain in Barbara's voice and her articulation that she doesn't know how to forgive herself. So when we can't physically touch him yet, when we can't see him with our mere mortal's eyes, how do we press into his healing, his hope, and his peace that are readily available when we can't sense them around us with great clarity?
Yes, absolutely. Well, Romans 8:39 reminds us that nothing can separate us from his love, and that in and of itself brings us great comfort, knowing that we can't be separated from Jesus. But his peace is something that we all yearn for. We want to be able to have that peace. And Jesus has made a way for us to have peace in this world. When we look at the followers of Jesus and how they, and by followers, pardon me, I mean his disciples, the people who actually walked on this earth with him, and they still had doubts. We know that it's not unexpected to him that we would have doubts as well. But he actually came to give us peace. He says in John 14:27, peace I leave with you, my peace I give to you. I do not give to you as the world gives. Do not let your hearts be troubled, and do not be afraid. And in Ephesians, we're reminded that Jesus is himself our peace. And I love where it tells us that Jesus will guard our hearts and our minds in Christ Jesus. That is in Philippians 4:7. So we have our own guards that are going to guard our hearts and our minds, and it's the peace of God. And it's hard for us to understand this around-the-clock type of peace because it's beyond the scope of our limited understanding. It's hard for us to know how we could live in a world that has so much turmoil, so much strife, how we can deal with so much stress, so much trauma, and still have peace. But the reality is that God protects, shields, guards, and keeps our souls safe in peace. And through Jesus, this peace can be present with us no matter what's going on inside of us or all around us.
Oh, great answer. Great answer. For someone who has not had one of these overwhelming life events or has never suffered such a traumatic episode as to cause PTSD, talk to me about what is the biggest misconception those who have not had those experiences have. And number two, how we can develop a more empathetic heart and how we reach out to those who have.
Yeah, great question. I think one of the most harmful things we can do in the Christian community is lead people to believe that if they're suffering, it's because they're not praying enough, or they're not reading the Bible enough, or they're not listening to enough worship music. And the reality is that's not the case. You know, Jesus tells us in John 16 that in this world we will have trouble. But take heart, he has overcome the world. So we can overcome as well, but that doesn't mean that we're not going to suffer. And I think we do a great disservice to people when we lead them to believe that they would be completely better if they just prayed more. And some people are praying around the clock and they're still struggling. And so I think that if we just realized that we can be devoted to Jesus Christ and still struggle, and that that's okay, and that there's still hope and healing available for us, instead of condemning people and making them feel ashamed and causing them to walk away, even from the church sometimes, because the church isn't being compassionate enough to those that are struggling. So I want to encourage people to be there for those in your life who are struggling, but give them space. Understand that they don't necessarily want to open up and talk about every detail. We can be patient and flexible. You know, we learn in 1 Corinthians that love is patient. So let's be patient with our loved ones who are suffering and be understanding of them when they aren't acting exactly how we want them to act, because maybe they've had a bad night's sleep, or maybe they've experienced a reminder of their trauma and they're just having a bad day. And then also encourage your loved one to seek mental health treatment if needed. Now, we have to do this in love and compassion. We can't just tell someone, you're crazy, you need help, because that's exactly the opposite of what I'm saying here. The reality is she is not going crazy. She's having a reaction to an abnormal event. And if they don't resolve on their own, then she might benefit from some specific treatment designed to help her. So be encouraging to her. And finally, we've got to nurture our faith together, you know, pray together, worship together, read scripture together, and just be committed to being there for each other and reminding each other that the Lord is there and he's near to the brokenhearted.
Wow. I'm going to ask a big question, and I've got 30 seconds, which in some respects is not fair, Laurel, but to the person who has suffered an overwhelming event, how do you address the question of, where were you, God? If you're a good God, how did this happen? What do you tell them?
Yes, well, we know that God is good because we have so much evidence of his goodness in our own lives. And the reality is we live in a sinful and fallen and broken world. And as a result of that, bad things happen, and bad things happen to good people all the time. And it doesn't mean that we're bad. It just means that something bad happened. And sometimes we suffer because of our own sin. And in those cases, we have to repent. But we can always come back in reconciliation with our God, who loves us and sent his only son to die for us.
What a note to end on. Thank you so much. Laurel, let me tell my friends again, the book is called Reclaiming Sanity, Hope and Healing for Trauma, Stress, and Overwhelming Life Events. We've got a link on our website so that you can learn more both about Dr. Laurel Shaler and the book itself, in the market with janetpartial.org. While you're there, check out this month's Truth Tool. We're listener-supported radio. It's yours for a gift of any amount. Like us on Facebook, In the Market with Janet Partial, and follow us on Twitter, at Partial Talk. Thank you so much for being with us, friends. We'll see you next time on In the Market with Janet Partial.